It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Mayor of Rockham, Phil Goff. Good morning. Welcome to BFM Breakfast again.
Good morning, Mikey. Yeah.
How's the town looking? What's on the agenda?
It's looking okay out there. It's the traffic's been pretty heavy this week. I've taken an hour to get in the morning, which I don't enjoy. But that's what happens when the city's growing and we've got a lag in the infrastructure. But we're trying to fix that. Yeah, slowly but surely. This week we're starting to probably get back to normal after the trauma of the 2 weeks following the shootings in Christchurch. I think the change that created will be permanent in New Zealand, including on the gun laws, I hope. I'm seeing the gun lobby now fighting back and saying, no, we should have these weapons out in the community that are designed to kill human beings, even if they're not needed for hunting or not needed for farming. We should still have them. I don't buy that line at all. And I think actually most parliamentarians won't and most New Zealanders won't.
I heard yesterday that there's already 157 have been handed in, and I thought, and even then I went, 157 of those weapons out there. That freaked me out. But
196, but that's a fraction of them.
Yeah.
And
that still seems like an awful lot of that particular type of gun to be even out in any sort of. Yeah. What are they? Is that all for getting rid of for culling stock?
Oh, I don't know. No. There is no. Look, I'm a firearms license holder. I have been since I was a 16-year-old, and I'm partly because I'm a farmer and it's pest control is my main use for firearms these days. But there is no need for
most days, I think. Well, not just these days.
No, there is no argument for it. And John Howard, after the shootings way back and whenever it was in Port Arthur, moved quickly on it. Yeah. The Brits moved quickly on it after Dunblane, when that guy went in and killed the kids in the school. And we don't want to end up as the United States. This killer, with ordinary firearms, could have done a lot of damage, but it would have been a fraction of the number of people he was able to kill and injure because he had access to an AR-15, which is like an M16 semi-automatic military-style weapon that they used in Vietnam. Why do you need weapons designed to kill people in our community? And even if you're a responsible owner, you've got no guarantee that firearm is not going to be stolen, end up in the wrong hands, etc. And I have zero time for those people that said, oh, we're going to bury our guns in the garden. Well, I'm sorry, mate, whether you're a gang member or whether you're a so-called respectable member of the community, if you thumb your nose at the laws of the land that have been passed overwhelmingly by Parliament, then you deserve the treatment that'll be coming to you.
Right. Now, did you think that the remembrance... goings on around the country were pretty moving on Friday. I thought some amazing words were said and some amazing, amazing seed was planted for the future of New Zealand. I thought.
Yeah. Look, the person that really just overwhelmed me was Fareed Ahmed, who was the man in the wheelchair.
He was amazing.
Whose wife
he?
Had been murdered, and that really brought tears to my eyes. I've been saying to people, I think I have too much Celtic in me to be as forgiving as him. He was sort of in the stature of Mahatma Gandhi in terms of his ability to forgive.
It was interesting too. Leanne Dalziel, the mayor of Christchurch, said afterwards that she had known him for a long time, and that he had always been that person. You're right. That was particularly moving.
I thought his speech and the Prime Minister's speech I thought was really good as well. And it captured the mood. And, look, whenever you have a tragedy, you think, well, what good can come out of this? We know the harm that was done, 50 people's lives stolen from them, another 50 people wounded.
And the ripple effects of all that.
Yeah. And we've still got armed police on the streets because we worry about copycat, and we worry about, potentially we might have worried about a vengeful community that wanted to strike out at others. The Muslim community has just been remarkable in its calmness and its dignity and its graciousness. But the New Zealand community as a whole has just, wow, you know, you actually felt really proud to be a New Zealander, you know, and, you know, I'm not kind of the sort of person that wears their heart on their sleeve, and but, you know, I thought...
No, I don't think I've ever been as proud to be alive in New Zealand and be call myself a New Zealander as I was that day.
Everywhere I went, people, decent people, reaching out, being supportive, saying, you know, this is not us. These are the values that we hold to. And I think there will be a permanent change, probably a permanent change in the way that we look at our Muslim community, because for the first time, most people actually have had some insight into the Muslim community. You know, they've just seen people dressed differently from us, and then they've seen the stories on TV about ISIS, and they've sometimes, merged the two together without much rationality.
Well, yeah, people looked over their fence, and they've actually talked to people, they looked people in the eye and not just muttered in corners to each other. Hey, I wanted to ask you about, there's a massive donation given by a controversial Chinese businessman over here, which you received an initial $500,000 check from let me get his name right, Zhang Yikun.
I know him quite well. He's the president of the Chao Shan Society, and they're hosting this year what's called the Tao Chu International Convention. The Tao Chu people come from Guangdong, and they've spread out all over the Pacific. So we had people, I met them first of all on the Friday night of the massacre, because they had a dinner for the heads of delegation, and I said I'd come along and speak, and I got there an hour and a half late because I'd been meeting with the Muslim community at the Avondale police station. And I just took time at the beginning of my speech to explain what had happened in Christchurch and what I felt that meant for New Zealand. And just spontaneously, you know, there were people there from San Francisco, from Silicon Valley, from Malaysia, from China, from the Chao Shan Society in New Zealand. Just spontaneously, one after the other, they got up and said, "We'd like to make a donation to the victims of this terrible thing that's happened in Christchurch." And so we got pledges on the Friday night, probably of several hundred million. And
700,000, you mean?
Several hundred thousand. Let me just get that right. Thank you for correcting me on that. And then by the Sunday night, when I opened their convention, that grew to 2.3 million, which was an incredibly generous act from one section of the community. And, you know, that money we have paid directly to the Christchurch Foundation, which is a subsidiary of the Christchurch Council, which will go directly to help the victims or the families of those that were killed and those that were injured. And I just thought that was a lovely thing for that community to have done.
Mr. Yikun was he's sort of part of that part of the Jamie Lee Ross donation and the National Party donation debacle, isn't he? Though, should we be worried about that? And how much of it is the reason I brought it up is because there's another the Kaja Leadership Network, which is another Muslim group, is saying that donation, part of that donation, should be returned. To be focused on the way that Muslims are treated within China. What are your thoughts on that? I mean,
First of all, the way the Uyghur people are being treated in Western China is unacceptable, and I'm glad the Prime Minister raised that with the President of China.
I was going to ask you where you knew that.
But secondly, when people give you a donation towards the victims of a terrible tragedy, you don't take that donation and say, no, now we're going to use that money for a totally different cause.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a kind of a naive ask in that sense. This group is not a Chinese government group. It's a Chinese group. Let's accept from these people that they, in good faith, with nothing to personal to gain from it, said, "We feel for you in New Zealand." A lot of them were international people. Some of them were New Zealand people. "We feel for you here. This is a terrible thing. And this is a gesture of our sorrow and sympathy and support for those that were affected by it."
Yeah,
so you accept that in good faith. Now, Mr. Zhang is a guy... I know has been acknowledged in the honours list for the philanthropic work he does in the community. He's been honoured in the Kiwi Bank Local Hero of the Year awards. I attended those awards and saw him awarded the medal.
So you're convinced that the heart's in the right place. That's all I was asking.
To the best of my knowledge, he is a decent guy. He's a very wealthy guy. I know nothing negative about him, and I'm sure if there was negative stuff about him, it would have emerged. Like many people in the Chinese community, they will make donations politically to people. They generally make donations, often make donations to different sides of politics. That's up to them. There's no reason he's, as I understand, he's a New Zealand citizen. There's no reason why he can't do that. And being caught up with Jamie Lee Ross was probably unfortunate, but that wasn't of his choosing. We've got to look at
the parties there.
But
We've got to take into consideration too that a lot of it was spur of the moment, and over a very intense weekend that would have been a very intense time for them to be meeting as well with all that was going on.
Should we move on to
the council pushing back on there's iwi calls to ban the scattering of ashes in public waterways.
Where were we there?
I would have thought that would have been something that we would have been all in agreement on years ago.
Well, actually not. We have a real challenge with the scattering of ashes.
There's pretty clear rules though, aren't there, about what you can and can't do.
Probably not. When my nephew was killed in Afghanistan, we scattered half of his ashes on the coast off California, which is where he'd grown up as a young man, and in the oceans where he loved to surf. That felt right from our cultural point of view for a member of our family. I was talking to a member of one of the local boards in Auckland, and she said, and she'd raised the issue that Mana Whenua had raised with her and said, well, actually, my dad's ashes we scattered at sea because he was a great fisherman and he loved it. And the real cross-cultural clash...
Yeah, I'm going in the sea for sure.
But we'll wait till you die first. One of the cross-cultural issues is for the Indian community, because the Indian community, as actually probably most of us now, with the exception of Pacifica and Maori people and Muslim people, we get cremated. And then the challenge comes, how do you dispose of the ashes? In the Indian community, it is traditional to dispose of the ashes in the sea or in the rivers. You see it in the Ganges River
The argument's a tongue to whenua thing, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And so what you've got is a cross-cultural clash. I mean, there are, respect the culture of Mana Whenua as the first people of the land, but there are other cultures with other ideas. And you don't simply slam dunk one culture and say, your cultural ideas have no place here, and we're only looking at what this set of cultural values are. You try to find a sensible compromise. Now, it's not that the ashes don't cause a health problem. Let's get that right. They are inert. There is no damage environmentally. The environmental damage, ironically, comes from the icons, the plastic icons that are sometimes part of the Indian ceremony, and we're dealing separately with that.
Right.
But I do understand from a Mana Whenua point of view.
Traditionally it's a food that mingles. It's a place where food is gathered and life was.
If you're gathering your kind
of. As long as we're all onto it, that's what we need to
say. So what we're trying to do in essence is say, look, can we find a compromise here where, if this is a Kaimoana area, that we will avoid scattering ashes there. If this is a bathing area, we'll try to do that. But at the same time, allow for people to, we've had this problem, the Rose Gardens in Parnell were incredibly popular as a place where a cross-section of Aucklanders wanted to scatter their ashes.
Yeah.
We got so many ashes there that it was overwhelming, that area, and we had to put restrictions in place. This is not a problem that's an easy one to solve. It's not a problem that's going to go away or become less.
Right.
So, therefore, we've got to try to find some consensus around where should we constrain the scattering of ashes and where should we allow people to carry out what is actually important to them You know, my dad was an Air Force pilot during the war. He wanted his ashes scattered at the end of the runway at Ardmore. And that's what we intend to do with them. Yeah. And you know, gosh, I don't know. Am I breaking a bylaw by doing that? I'm not sure.
Check with the mayor.
That doesn't give me any special exemption.
Yeah.
So we've just got to find our way through that problem. But we've got to be sensitive, not only to one culture, but to a range of different cultures, and try to find some common ground. Look, most mana whenua that I talk to, they say, look, yeah, we understand the needs of that culture, and look, let's try and find a solution to it. Yeah. So I think there'll be some goodwill there. Doesn't make it an easy problem to solve, but let's set out to try to accommodate different people's different cultural values,
yep,
without treading on any one of those cultures.
Right on. Now, the final question, a question from a listener. Is there a register which shows which way councillors voted for significant issues over the last term, so that voters can,
yep,
decide who to vote for next time?
Yep.
There is.
There is, when there's a division call for in council, there will be a written record of how people voted in that particular vote. And divisions are generally called when the votes are controversial. In other votes, it's simply on the voices. Sometimes people have got the right on council. They might be in a minority and to say, look, that vote's gone through, but could you please record my vote against it? So they have the ability to do that. But on the most controversial issues and the closest cut issues, you know, like Eden Park, you can go to, I presume you can get it online, but you can...
Needy old Eden Park, eh?
Yeah.
Poor old Eden Park.
I haven't changed my...
The city sponge.
I haven't changed my mind on that, and I think... My fellow councillors made the wrong decision. But you can find out, and it's important that you can find out on those issues, because you've got the right to know how your mayor and your councillors voted.
All right, Phil, thank you very much. Nice to speak to you. Speak to you again this time next week.
Okay, thanks,
bye-bye.
Mikey. Cheers, mate. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goth.